Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Wattier.
And I'm Tommy Welling, and you're listening to the Fasting for Life podcast.
This podcast is about using fasting as a tool to regain your health, achieve ultimate wellness, and live the life you truly deserve.
Each episode is a short conversation on a single topic with immediate actionable steps. We cover everything from fat loss and health and wellness to the science of lifestyle design.
We started Fasting for Life because of how fasting has transformed our lives, and we hope to share the tools that we have learned along the way. Hey everyone, welcome to the Fasting for Life podcast. My name is Dr. Scott Wattier, and I am here, as always, with my good friend and colleague, Tommy Welling. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Doing great, sir. Ready to have a good in-depth conversation today. This was a email that came in from one of the listeners with a specific question about a specific subset of disease process in the body that affects the liver. Mm-hmm. We'll go into that in just a second. So we're going to go over a few research articles. We're going to talk about, why this is important, why this is something that we feel the need to talk about, how it relates to health and weight loss. And most importantly, we're going to end the episode with very specific outcomes that you can do to make sure that you do not end up as one of the statistics that relates to non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, or NAFLD. Mouthful.
Wow. Yeah, it really is. And, you know, we see a lot of misinformation about this and a lot of, kind of misunderstanding. I know it had been kind of misquoted to me for a long time. And some of the conclusions and what the research actually shows and how to prevent and reverse this are somewhat counterintuitive, actually.
Yeah, when the first question came in through email, my first reaction was, well, the question was, can fasting help with this? And there's a lot of things that fasting can do to help the body balance out. And, just a quick couple of Google searches of NAFLD, you'll get the typical, Medscape, Medline, what's the other one? WebMD, mm-hmm. Some definitions. They'll say there's really no known cause, but there is a known cause. And we're going to talk about how to avoid that. But the reason why, this is important from a metabolic health or long-term health perspective is that the three categories of people that typically have this, which is now 25% of the United States, and it's increasing at a rate that will make it the number one cause of liver disease in the country. Hepatitis numbers are going down. Alcohol, there's always going to be some, sadly enough, some component of, liver disease due to alcohol and alcoholism.
Right.
But the liver disease numbers are are up to 25% of Americans. And what comes with that is obesity, type 2 diabetes, and, once you have those, you're now in a category of having a higher chance of cardiovascular issues, dyslipidemia, high cholesterol, high triglycerides, et cetera.
Right.
So the reason we feel like it's important to talk about is because the cause of this, which is hard to find, like you alluded to, Tommy, comes down to two main things, which is fructose and glucose.
Yeah. And just even starting with the name of it is almost kind of misleading, because a lot of people, like you said, 25% of the population has a degree of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, but they may not have even heard this term used when they got their blood work back or things were being spoken about in a doctor's office. And that's kind of part of the issue too, because this is an accumulation of fat in the liver where it shouldn't be holding on to the fat. And typically what that looks like is like you said, dyslipidemia, LDL and HDL get thrown off. Triglycerides are on the rise, and a number of other things that, again, don't always have this term associated with it.
Yeah, it's not something that, you'll be told your cholesterol's off, but it takes a while to have the fatty liver diagnosis. Your liver enzymes will be off. And this is something that I started to notice over the years for me with my insulin resistance, my weight gain, when I was trying to do everything right, I was tracking, I was working out, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I just could not figure out why my liver enzymes are off. I wasn't eating fast food. It just didn't make any sense. but I was on my way to having, you know, this diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So it kind of like almost stays under the radar.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because you just said something there that fat is not supposed to be in your liver. Fat is supposed to be stored in your fat cells, like your mm-hmm. adipose tissue, right? Yep. So there's three sources of fat. We'll talk about that in 1 second. One other thing in terms of the increase that I forgot to mention was there's a study out of The Lancet in 2014 from, they looked at in the United Kingdom from 1998 to 2010, there was a 10 times increase in hospitalizations due to fatty liver disease. And, you know, there's a whole wide range of symptoms, you know, fatigue, you know, stiff liver, digestive issues. There's a whole bunch of different stuff, but it's very, it's not the first place that you go a lot of times. So it's something that we felt was important to talk about after, especially after the question was posed, because fasting and, you know, kind of how we go into a little bit of the science is going to be a really good way to make sure that you never end up in this position or even having to ever think about this.
Yeah. And, you know, a point that you made earlier about the carbohydrates and how they play such a pivotal role in this. And that gets at another part of the kind of counterintuitive aspect of fatty liver disease is how important those carbohydrates are in both the development of the disease as well as, you know, potentially the reversal of it as well. Right.
Yeah. So to break it down one step farther from there, and I love the way you said reversal because it's absolutely reversible. So, you know, Dr. Fung, who, you know, was the book that you first read and then the place that I started when it came to fasting, you know, absolutely says, I'm not quoting him here, but that it's one of the cheapest, most readily treatable things out there right. that you don't need to be hospitalized for, have major doctor supervision for, like your body's going to naturally do it. The liver is one of those magical, you know, spots in the body that can regenerate. It can regrow, right? You can donate portion of your liver. Like it mm-hmm. has the ability to regenerate. So no matter if you're looking at, you know, a couple years, you know, looking at a little bit of abnormal blood work, or you're 40 years down the line with this, with type 2 diabetes, obesity, and heart disease, and other comorbidities, the cool thing is that it's undoable. It's reversible.
Yeah.
And to go a little bit deeper, you know, fat cells, like we mentioned, are not supposed to be, you know, in the liver, but it's due to an overabundance of one of the three sources. And then I want to go into, Tommy, after that, the effects of fructose and glucose. We'll talk about high fructose foods, carbohydrates, and then we'll go over the research and some action steps. But the three sources are going to be coming for fat in your liver. The three main sources, I should say, or the only, I should say the only three only sources, excuse me, in a normal liver are going to be, the three categories are new de novo lipogenesis. So new fat, you're going to have plasma fatty acids or triglycerides that are coming from your bloodstream. And then from your a dietary component or from your meals. But what a misconception out there, and you talked about this, is a lot of people think diet fat in the diet is going to turn into fat in the body or a fatty liver, right?
Right.
And that's not true. About 5% of the fat in the liver is, or the three, one of the three sources is only about 5% of that. The 52% in a normal liver is from the plasma. And then 10% is from the formation of new fat, where to, I know I kind of made that really convoluted, so I'll do it one more time. In a normal liver, 10% comes from new fat formation, de novo lipogenesis. 52% comes from the plasma, stuff floating around in your bloodstream. And then 5% comes from, you know, meals or dietary sources. But in NAFLD, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, there's a 2.3 increase in the formation of new fat. And then there's a decrease in the sources from the bloodstream, but then the dietary component kind of stays the same. Mm-hmm. So where is this coming from? Well, it's coming from two main sources, which is what's hard to find out there, which is fructose and glucose.
Yeah. And just the fact that that you mentioned the fat not making you fat. And I feel like being a product of the 80s and 90s, and I remember right. I remember the things in the pantry, like, you know, the snack wells and the, you know, the low fat cookies, you know, and things like that.
The Ritz crackers.
Right. And you know, yeah, just tons and tons of crackers, because they were they were looked at like a better snack because they were low fat, you know, during the time. And, you know, luckily the tides have kind of changed, but, you know, all that began kind of in the late 70s, I believe.
Right.
And you know, kind of hit a peak in the 80s and 90s, but that's still on a lot of people's minds where it can be tough to mentally get past the whole, well, it's the fats that we brought in weren't the issue here. Like you said, the carbohydrates, are what start to back up the liver and especially the processed fructose and how that has to be processed within the liver, because nothing else in the body can process, those fructose molecules. And how that leads to actually fatty liver disease.
Yeah, that was a key point right there. So fructose cannot be used or processed anywhere else in the body. Glucose can be used and processed and absorbed in your skeletal muscles and in your liver, right? So there's a lot of other places your brain can use glucose, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But fructose has been shown to have a 6 times increase in that de novo lipogenesis, or that new fat formation. And then that turns into like almost like a little fibrous component of your liver, where you'll have stiffness, you'll have that buildup, or that almost like a calcification, if you want to think about it that way.
Right.
I'm sure that's not the correct physiological term, but like that fibrotic kind of hardness to it. Yeah. The hardening of it. So fructose is a 6 time increase in that de novo lipogenesis. So, let's talk about where those sources of fructose come from. And when you think about fructose, a lot of people immediately go to fruit. So I'm just going to say this right now. Fruit is good for you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fruit has a natural component to it. Your body knows what to do to it. There's a fiber component. So we're not talking about cutting out fruit here. What we're talking about is cutting out the other sources of fructose that you may not know that are out there. And specifically, a lot of the prepackaged foods, even things like breads, will have forms or derivatives of something called high fructose corn syrup, which is literally a combination of fructose and glucose. But there's also things like soft drinks. So I just want to go through this list and then kind of, you know, talk about the carbohydrate side of things as well.
Yeah, the more concentrated the form of it, and the more of it is the fructose, like the pure engineered kind, the worse the effect on the liver in a much quicker fashion. So when you start concentrating it down to make it into this really viscous syrup, so that, you know, you can use a drop of it to start sweetening things like crackers and cookies and other, you know, packaged foods, or even like spaghetti sauces and things, yep, like that. That's when the effects get that much worse, that much faster.
Yeah, let's talk about the top of the list too. So fruit juices, right? So you might be thinking like kids' fruit juices, like apple juice, mm-hmm, grape juice, right? But we're not talking about squeezing homemade oranges. But there's one here that's really big, which is the Naked juices. There's, mm-hmm, a Naked juice. It's a Green Machine smoothie, and it has 30 grams of fructose per 16-ounce serving. So we're talking about a, wow, huge amount, like 9 teaspoons. 9 teaspoons per little bottle. So you're like, oh, I'm going to get this juice. It'll be better for me.
It's marketed as a healthy kind of, yeah, you know, juice too.
It's a common misconception. We know sugary soft drinks like colas, those types of things. A lot of people know that. A couple, sure, other hidden sources, like dried fruits, like dried cranberries, dried figs, those types of things. They typically have a higher fructose component, and it's not from the fruit itself. It's from the addition of the sweeteners. So there's, mm-hmm, a lot of, if you flip it over and just see dried cranberries, you're probably going to see a couple other ingredients there as well. Things like honey is a high fructose component. Sweetened fruit yogurts, like the yogurts that I grew up on, like the, yeah, strawberry, blueberry yogurts,
right.
You know, desserts, prepackaged desserts, things you buy out of the bakeries, even fast food like Whoppers and Burger King and those types of things. Never mind the additional, which is like putting on the ketchups and, you know, the barbecue sauces and the basil pestos and all that different types of stuff, also has fructose in it. And another big category is salad dressings, mm-hmm, you know, up to 12% fructose in those as well. So those are the foods that you want to avoid. You know, bananas and pears, yes. But we're not worried about you, you know, having massive problems and diabetes and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease by eating too many bananas, right? Like that would be, right, you know how many bananas you'd have to eat, right? Yeah. Like, so no, we want to avoid, you know, the high fructose corn syrups and those forms of fructose if you are trying to make sure that your liver is in a healthy state. And if you do have a concern about an AFLD, that's one place you can start.
Yeah, I think those are good points. Like you said, no one ever got NAFLD from eating bananas or pears, you know, but if it's something that you want to just remove all of those things off of the list, but you really want a pear every once in a while, just put a little bit more time in between the pears.
Yeah. 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 It's fast, right? We'll get
a little
there.
Pear this
is
fast, a fasting. Yeah.
This is fasting for life, right? I will get there. So that's something that we control a lot for my daughter at her school is, a lot of our snacks, and we go to Thrive Market. We go to Sprouts, we buy the stuff that's minimally processed, that has natural ingredients, that doesn't have those artificial stuff in it, because they are much, much, much sweeter. So if you have a high fructose corn syrup and then you're putting that into the body and it only has to be processed in the liver, you've got a 6 times increase in your new fat production, which can throw off your triglycerides and your cholesterol numbers and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to talk about a cool study with ADF that shows that ADF has a really dramatic effect on decreasing those. And there's a couple other studies we'll share too. The other side of this is, and this will segue into that study, Tommy, that you mentioned about the comparison between the low fat, low carb, high fat diet, right? Mm-hmm. I don't remember the other categories, so you're gonna have to fill it in here in just a second. But the carbohydrate content, when we eat carbs, that turns into glucose, which also can form, or contribute to the fatty liver situation. But that research article was really interesting. So I kind of want to go into that now.
Yeah. Where the more glucose comes into play as well is because, as we start intaking these foods, we have a mixture of sugars usually that are coming in at the same time. It's not usually just fructose or just glucose.
Right.
But as we,
unless you're having a PET scan or a fasting oral glucose test or something, sure, right? Yeah. Other than that,
no one's doing those for fun. I don't think. But when you're eating a meal and it's contributing to the intake of these sugar molecules, the body wants to keep the blood sugar in a certain range, and so it starts to process it. But again, the glucose being easy to process throughout the body, but then the fructose just having a terrible effect on the liver, just going into that lipogenesis that mode immediately.
Yeah, I like the framing of one of these. So when you're in this category worrying about metabolic conditions, type 2 diabetes, obesity, heart disease, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, those types of things, we want to be metabolically healthy, right? So if we're looking at some things we can do to improve that, there was a cool study out of the BMC gastroenterology. And it looked at effects of ADF, which is alternate day fasting. So you eat, you have a normal eating window one day. And we did a podcast back in the day comparing OMAD versus ADF. And some people prefer ADF versus OMAD. I prefer OMAD versus ADF because I don't really like eating breakfast, right? So I typically don't eat until midday or later in the day. Or now that I've adopted OMAD, it's typically later in the evening with the family. So, but this study looked specifically at dyslipidemia in patients with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And it showed a huge improvement. Total cholesterol was significantly decreased in the ADF group compared to the time-restricted feeding group. But both groups, right, achieved a significant reduction in serum triglycerides after 12 weeks, which was really, really cool to see that the fasting was taking care of the downstream effect of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which could be elevated triglycerides. Because once you start breaking down the fat in the liver, these are going to be released into the bloodstream. So fasting is actually going to have a positive effect on decreasing the higher elevated numbers over time, which I thought was really a really cool outcome.
Yeah, and it didn't take that long to do it either.
12 weeks.
And there were positive results even as quickly as 4 weeks when they started, actually looking at the numbers changing. So, I mean, that's really, really good. It's not something that's taking, as long as it took to develop it to reverse it. So again, going back to just understanding that you can kind of do a U-turn on this, wherever you are kind of on the road towards this, whether, the blood work's just looking a little bit off, or like you said, it's been 3 or 4 decades and looking bad for a while, you can still make that U-turn, and it doesn't take all that long to do it.
Yeah, that's why I love where you foreshadowed the reversal early on in the conversation today. This is another article out of the Journal of Nutrients in 2019, effects of periodic fasting on fatty liver index. So they categorized, a large group of individuals in the study that had, that were on the fatty liver index scale. And this was a cool outcome. And it showed that after fasting, now periodic fasting, this was not strict fasting windows where you're sticking to a fasting window day after day after day, right, Tommy?
Right.
So it was kind of hard to even like define what they talked about as periodic fasting. But a shortened window of eating over a set number of days, anywhere between 12 to 13 days.
Yeah.
And then there was, obviously all the way from 6 all the way up to 38, but body mass index decreased. They lost greater than 5% body weight after fasting. Nearly half of the highest ranked fatty liver index, so the people highest on the ranking in the highest risk category, they shifted down an entire category in that short amount of time. Wow. And the improvement also correlated directly with the number of fasting days with the magnitude of the decrease of the body mass index. So literally the periodic fasting led to weight reduction, which led to significant decreases on that risk scale. So the more days you fasted, the more time you fasted, the direct correlation between your change in category. So you went from high risk to low risk. You went down an entire category, your BMI reduced. And it was cool to see that, people were coming, removing themselves from the fatty liver index. And these were all people there was a mix of type 2 and non-type 2. So you don't have to have type 2 to have fatty liver. So it was right. Cool to see that, you may sitting here listening to the article going, well, this doesn't really apply to me. Well, fasting will prevent you from ever being in either one of these categories.
Yeah. Yeah. Like fixing it before the problem's really
before it's broke.
Yeah. Right.
Maintenance on your car.
Yeah.
Dental appointments, brushing your teeth, all those, all of those fun little analogies, right?
Right. It really is. Because what I heard from you for the results was basically that it was time dependent. The longer that you were on the fasting protocol, the more reversal of the disease process that actually happened. And it was interesting because the method that they used was basically allowing the subjects to be on an extended longer fast and to go almost kind of as long as they wanted to on that. Now they had the option to intake a little bit. And so most of them were taking in somewhere between 200 to 500 calories per day. But going along, that kind of like 4 days to I think 13, 14 days and just seeing the results, growing over time for those extended fasts. I mean, this is really cool. And I'm going to be reflecting on this article the next time I'm doing a longer fast as well.
Yeah. I love that perspective. And I liked, so that 200 to 500 calorie thing could, there's fast mimicking diets out there, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And ADF or the 5-2, allows you to have, is it ADF or 5-2? I can never remember that. Allows you to have, some protocols allow you to have 500 yeah. calories or less on your fasting days.
Yeah.
So there's different, people define fasting 100 different ways. And we've talked a lot about that over the podcast episodes of how we define it, how it's worked for us. And we've heard a lot about you guys, how you just kind of make it fit your life, which is why we love fasting so much. Mm-hmm. This last article, Tommy, which I alluded to earlier, not very clearly. So I want to make sure I come back to it is this is the one that is the treatment of NAFLD with intermittent calorie restriction or low carb, high fat diet. Right.
Yeah.
There was a cool distinction here between the low carb, high fat group and the 5-2 diet group, which is the fasting group. And I thought it was a cool outcome because of the actual physical effect on the liver.
Yeah, this one was really cool because those are two really good potential approaches, but we haven't seen them kind of put them both together. To compare the results, but they both had a 50% reduction in the actual fatty component of the liver. So they both had, you know, basically equal results for you know, helping reverse the fatty liver disease process. But what I also thought was really cool was that the 5-2 had its own set of distinct benefits over the low carb, high fat diet, because what the 5-2 was able to do was actually lower the LDL levels and improve the liver stiffness measurement, and was tolerated to a greater degree for longer periods of time in the test subjects. So it was easier to stick to, and it had additional benefits that the low carb, high fat didn't provide.
And we know that we've talked about in the past that low carb, high fat diets, low carb diets in people with diabetics, there's multiple studies out there that show that the adherence to that diet is difficult for long periods of time.
Right.
And that people at the 2-year mark typically go back and gain a small percentage of weight and end up back where they started, or even in a worse position. So sure. Yes, this is a fasting podcast. Yes, we condone fasting lifestyle, insulin-friendly lifestyle. It's how we live. It's how we've gotten our life back,
right?
Our lives back. But I loved that. Never mind the fact that this study showed in both of those groups compared to the control group, that there was a 50% reduction in the fatty component of the liver in 12 weeks. 50% reduction. I just want to make sure that, like, the importance of, we're going to give you three things that you can do, and we've already talked about them, but we're going to summarize them here as we close out the episode, to make sure that your liver is healthy and functioning, because it is kind of important, right? It is the detoxification center, you know, of the body, that, you know, 50% reduction in 12 weeks. So if, it is something that you're concerned with, my answer is absolutely fasting, low carb, high fat diets, used in conjunction can be in a very attainable way to reverse or avoid the situation.
Yeah. You know, and we hear from a lot of people who say, you know, I don't really have a whole lot of weight to lose. You know, maybe I could stand to lose maybe 10 or 15 pounds or maybe right. even not that much, but what I'm noticing now is that my blood work's getting a little out of whack, where, you know, it always, you know, used to track well. But now things aren't quite looking perfect anymore, but I don't really know what to do about it. I don't want to get on medication for it. It's not that bad. Right. It, you know, things like that, where it's kind of this in between. But what I'm seeing here from the results from all these is that a little bit of fasting goes a long way. And, you know, like we talk about, just kind of restoring that balance. It's very possible, and it doesn't have to take all that long either, or be very difficult to do.
Yeah. And it's very hard because, you know, there's not a lot of symptoms that come along with, you know, you might see some stuff on blood work. You might have some, you know, fatigue, pain, or weight loss resistance, you know, so weight loss resistance goes hand in hand with how we ended up here, insulin resistance, weight loss resistance, and how we can undo those things. So to wrap up today's episode, what can you do? What are the action steps? So first of all is to limit the intake of fructose and all of those hidden sources that we talked about. You can limit your refined and processed carbohydrates, which turn directly into glucose, right? Or sugar. So, you know, more whole food sources, if you're going to have them, carbohydrates, sweet potatoes, you know, whole grains, like those type of thing. If you do need some carbohydrate in your diet, right? Because we know super low carb is hard to stick to long term. It's okay to have the pasta dinner or the pizza night with the family, right? We need to fit that into our life, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, incorporating the fasting component is really going to get you there. So if you're new to fasting, if you've been fasting for a while, hopefully this adds a cool perspective of additional benefits to fasting that don't relate to weight loss specifically, but more about the health component, which is really why I stopped eating that day you told me, you know, back on Father's Day in 2019, you're like, no, just stop eating. Right. So, with that, Tommy, any final thoughts as we wrap up?
I just think it's a really cool point of encouragement for what we're doing. And, you know, if you feel like you've been kind of dabbling or dipping your toes in, you know, jump in.
Yep. Best way to do that, go to our website, www.thefastingforlife.com, www.thefastingforlife.com. You can sign up for our Fast Start Guide. It is a 6-step guide to show you how to put fasting into your day-to-day life. It is focused on the one meal a day approach. We've gotten so much positive feedback from people that have headed there. You can sign up for our newsletter as well and get our emails. We also appreciate 5-star reviews on Apple. That tells Apple that we're doing something right, that people like us and that they're listening. So we appreciate all 5-star reviews. Yep. Tommy, as always, sir, appreciate you and we'll talk soon.
Thanks. Bye.
So you've heard today's episode and you may be wondering, where do I start? Head on over to thefastingforlife.com and sign up for our newsletter, where you'll receive fasting tips and strategies to maximize results and fit fasting into your day-to-day life.
While you're there, download your free Fast Start guide to get started today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Fasting for Life.